Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
The investigation into Michael Brown's death is ongoing. So is the debate over the actions taken by officials in the aftermath of Brown's killing. We wanted to get a police officer's point of view. Jim Bierman worked for the police department in Redlands, California for 33 years, including as its chief. He's now president of the Police Foundation, a nonprofit, nonpartisan group that supports innovation and improvement in policing. And he's with us from the studios of KVCR in San Bernardino, California. Jim, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
And Jim, we have heard a lot of views about the Michael Brown shooting through from many different perspectives, but you're looking at this through the eyes of a police officer. What do you see and what do you think as you watch this situation unfolding?
Well, I have a lot of feelings and emotions about it. You know, overall, I think it's unquestionably a tragic situation for the community of Ferguson and all of the people involved. The young man lost his life. It has changed forever the life of the police officer that was involved. If there is any silver lining to such a tragedy is that it has sparked again the discussion that we should be having in this country about race, class, policing, the use of force, and how the police are perceived by the communities they serve.
And what do you think that the police force sort of collectively needs to be doing differently, should be doing differently, related to that conversation you think we should have?
You know, I think there are some universal principles that every police department ought to pay attention to. So Robert Peel, who is widely viewed as the father of modern policing, said that the people are the police and the police are the people. Means that the police department should reflect the community they serve in terms of its diversity. But it also means that there should be a co-production of public safety.
And when you say co-production, what do you mean by co-production?
So this is a fundamental underpinning of what's known as community-based policing. So do they consult with the community? Do they say, here is the crime problem we have. Here's a response to that that we think is going to be effective. What do you, the community, think about that? Because so much of what goes on in policing in terms of the community reaction is a direct result of whether the community has confidence in the police. Do they trust the police? Do they feel that they're open, transparent, and accountable? Do they feel they have a voice in terms of policing? And when the police department does not reflect the ethnic makeup of the community it serves. And that disparity is as significant as it is, or it has been reported in Ferguson, then in my opinion, the question is not, is there going to be a problem between the community and the police? The question is, when is that problem going to occur?
Jim, if you had been brought in as an advisor in the midst of the protests that were going on over the past few weeks, you know, a person killed, the community up in arms, the national media descending, what would your advice have been at that point?
The first thing for me would have been to make sure that everybody understood that there was a significant difference, it appeared to me, from the media reports between the protests during the day and the protests at night. The protests during the day appeared to me to be vocal but very peaceful. And the nighttime protests were entirely different, where people were throwing rocks and bricks and bottles at the police. So it had a very different personality. And during the daytime, the use of heavily armored up police officers carrying assault weapons, using armored vehicles, I think was extremely problematic. As somebody who spent a lot of time in the world of policing, in a community-based policing organization, it broke my heart to watch police officers pointing assault rifles during the day at peaceful protesters. I think what they should have been doing is facilitating those protests and helping them.
Jim, on that issue of militarization, the former police commissioner for New York City, Ray Kelly, also weighed in on this. And he told ABC News over the weekend that people get uneasy when they see Humvees and military-type weapons on the street. Here's what else he had to say.
I think the fundamental question is, what is the need? Do we need that equipment? And does it make people feel like the police are an occupying army? So as far as the military distribution of equipment, I think it deserves examination.
Jim Bierman, do you agree with that assessment by Ray Kelly?
100%. I mean, he talks about people asking the question, what is the need? And I talked about the co-production of public safety. And I would suggest that you also have to have the co-production of public and policing policy. So that, for instance, if a police department wanted to acquire one of these heavily armored vehicles or other Humvees or whatever, the things that are very symbolic of this notion of militarization, does the locally elected body weigh in? Do they have a public hearing about this? Because it isn't so much the equipment, because those things have a rational use in policing depending on the situation. It is the context and the situation in which those pieces of equipment are used. I think if there was an armed robbery at a bank and the people doing the bank robbery were shooting at innocent people and the police, most folks would be okay with the police pulling up in an armored vehicle to try to safely apprehend those bad guys.
Among people who believe that something very wrong happened in the shooting of Michael Brown, and there are, of course, many people who feel that way, a couple details really stick out and come up over and over again. One is that he was unarmed when he was shot, apparently, and the other is that he was shot 6 times, according to an autopsy. When you hear those two things, what do you think?
Well, I think we don't know enough about the case to make a judgment. But remember, I'm looking at this through the lens of somebody who spent 3 decades in policing. So I understand the community outrage and the fact that people would be immediately upset about an unarmed person being shot, and there should be concern about that, absolutely, or the number of times he was struck by the officer's bullets, and they should be concerned about it. But there are technical issues involved in that that relate to stopping somebody who's assaulting you. I know several officers that have been severely beaten by unarmed suspects. So the fact that he did or did not have a gun in and of itself may not be as problematic as people think it is, but we don't know. The part of the problem with this incident is there's been very little transparency in the policing side of this story. People will naturally fill that void with their own perceptions, their own mental models of how the world works, that are informed by their experiences with the police. And if they have not been good, positive experiences with the police, then they're likely to fill that void with negative perspectives and conclusions and assumptions because nothing's countering that.
Jim Bierman worked for the Redlands, California Police Department for 33 years, including as its chief. He's now president of the nonprofit, nonpartisan Police Foundation. Jim, thanks very much.
It's my pleasure.